Odyssey celebrates National Hispanic Heritage Month, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or trap pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Oh, such a clutch offseason pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
And a minimal salary cap hit. Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sunday mornings on The Score.
Is reckoning the wrong word to assign to what's going on right now?
Yeah, I mean, I've been trying to use really boring language on purpose just so I didn't get anything thrown back at me for a year. And also tried to be less verbose. That's hard for me.
Yeah, less verbose. Hosts overnight here on The Score. Love his show. Always dipping into the Wayback Machine. And this hour that's brought to you by the Wayback Inn. How about that? It's Matt Spiegel here on Hit and Run, broadcasting to you live from the Hyundai Studios. And I am here until noon, broadcasting live, by the way, from the Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. Mark Rohde's on after me at noon. Mark Potash will join him at 1. John Paul Morosi will join Mark Rohde at 2. But before that, let's listen to Theo Epstein with our Lawrence Holmes the other day, Friday, right here on The Score. They began by talking about the upcoming season and whether we would actually indeed have one or not, based on both the pandemic and the state of negotiations in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, well, we're all hopeful and confident that we'll have a season. What it looks like in terms of structure and format will obviously depend on the result of these negotiations that we hope end as soon as possible and we can all transition into playing. But as far as what it'll look like, I think we all have to prepare and fans have to prepare for it to look a little bit different, the way almost everything is going to look a little bit different. And players are going to be wearing masks at all times, except when they're on the field. They're going to be socially distanced. Even in the dugout, there's not going to be as much time spent indoors preparing for games. There's going to be some things that they simple things that you're used to seeing on the field that they're not going to be able to do. But I think the right perspective to take on it, and it's something that we're all learning to do in almost every aspect of our life, is to maybe not compare it to what we've been used to, because that's a losing proposition and you end up seeing the negatives if you play that game and mentally, and instead to look at it as an opportunity to craft something new in a difficult time, craft something that will have won't be the same, but will have meaning and substance and will resonate with a lot of people in an important way, and to sort of embrace the new challenging landscape and try to make something beautiful out of it. And I think that's what the players are going to do, and hopefully the whole institution of baseball can do and put on a really good product for the fans, because they certainly deserve it. This is the most challenging year probably most of us have been through. So to be able to deliver something redeeming for people would be something that we're all proud of.
Theo, I know you take a lot of pride in the relationship that you build with players. Obviously, you're the president of the Cubs, so there's the connection to ownership as well. How does one go about straddling the line when there's negotiations like this going on, where it can sometimes look contentious for those of us that are looking at it from the outside? How do you have to walk that line?
That's a good question. You know, during negotiations like this, and they usually take place out of the spotlight. Right now, everyone is unfortunately getting a look at how the sausage is made, and it's not always pretty, especially in this case. So it's unfortunate. We wish we were just focusing on playing ball. But when those types of negotiations happen, it's really, you know, it's a select group at the commissioner's office and the upper tier of the union and their player executive council. They're really most involved. Obviously, there's communication down through the ranks on both sides. But I feel like a lot of people in the game stay in communication and talk about the issues, and it doesn't become completely partisan. You know, it's not as if either side has to toe the party line, that there's more an open engagement on the issues. And especially, you know, if you've built up trusting relationships, you can talk about these issues. If you have developed some, you know, the skill of empathy, then you can have productive conversations on these topics with folks on the other side, or with folks from different perspectives. And it doesn't have to become, you know, pure lobbying or persuasion or adversarial in any way. So I think you're seeing a lot of that across the game. I mean, 99.9% of people in this game, including me, are you know, feel kind of as spectators in this and just eager to get back on the field. And I think that's where the players are coming from too. And obviously there are important issues at stake, and it's very complicated. I'm not trying to minimize the discussions at all, but it's not as if, you know, everyone in the game is dug in on one side or another. We know that there are negotiations going on, and, you know, we hope for a resolution that's best for the game of baseball going forward. That's all.
It's clear that George Floyd's death has affected us as a nation. The globalizing of his death has affected all of us. Specifically, it seems to very much affected you, and the way that people respond to it affected you. How did it affect you?
Well, I think you're right. I think it's affected all of us, and that this really feels like an inflection point in our country and in our country's history. And that, you know, it feels different than other galvanizing moments in the past that have seemed like they were the start, the beginnings of a movement, and then have died off as our sort of collective attention span dissipates. You know, I don't know. I've talked to a lot of people about why this one feels different or carrying so much weight. I do think, you know, perhaps the fact that with the pandemic, everyone was home with their families, consuming the news. The videotaped evidence in this case is, you know, so stark and undeniable and so tragic and senseless that there's no rationalizing it. There's no explaining it away, and there's no averting your eyes either. There's no turning away from this. And there's no turning away from the fact that this is not, you know, a one-time event. This is the type of thing that we're now seeing periodically. And I was following, it's not just, you know, police brutality either. I was following the Ahmaud Arbery case really closely as well. And obviously Breonna Taylor and all the other cases. So it's just undeniably a pattern at this point, and something that's systemic and institutionalized. And so, you know, it's moved a lot of people, and sometimes you don't know how to react. You don't know what to do. And that's why I think protest is so important. So, you know, there's always one person who protests first, and then others who follow, and then it becomes a movement, and then it becomes there becomes real momentum. So, you know, seeing people take to the streets and seeing people stand up and seeing people raise their voice, it does create a real momentum in the country. And I think what it does is causes people to take a fresh look at the way things are. Because the status quo can, you know, as horrible as it might be, as unjust as it might be, as much institutionalized racism as it might have in it, the status quo is easy to tolerate sometimes, you know, because we get so caught up in our own lives and the way things are that you sometimes don't even recognize it. You know, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar said that, you know, institutionalized racism can be like dust particles in the air where you don't even see it. It's all around you, but you don't even see it. And then a little bit of light comes into the room and you realize it's everywhere. Well, I think that's what you know, the early reaction to the George Floyd murder did for a lot of people is it lit a little bit of light into the room. And so, you know, you do take a moment to look around you with a fresh perspective, with new light in the room, and you realize, you know, this is a time to do something because it's everywhere. And so the people in the streets are very, very inspirational. And I had a chance to ride my bike down to one of the rallies last week. And, you know, one thing you notice right away is it's people of all races, it's people of all ages. These protests are happening all over the country, not just in big cities, but in rural areas and the Rust Belt and the Bible Belt, all over coast to coast. And then you notice that the young faces around you are the ones who are the most colorblind. You know, and this next generation really has it figured out. It's on us to help pave a better path for them. And if we can't, to get out of their way, you know, because they are creating a more just future for this country. And so it's up to each of us if we want to be part of it.
I think when all of us try to figure some of this stuff out, and we're talking with Theo Epstein here on The Score, we're all looking at it as a big problem. What impressed me with you in particular is that you were introspective in how it was impacting you and how it was impacting the game. So when it came time for you to look at hiring process, the structure of the way that the Cubs are built in a front office standpoint, what were the things that made you kind of take notice and say, perhaps we can find a different way to do things?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, those are the best things you can do initially is listen and then look inside and look inward and look at your own situation. And, you know, for me as a leader in, of this organization and in baseball operations, you have to look at your own decision making and examine that and see if perhaps, you know, you have your own you know, unconscious biases that exist. And you know, as a leader, all leaders, whether they like it or not, or whether it's intentional or not, they shape the culture around them. And so the environment of an organization is there in the makeup of an organization, the demographics of an organization, is the responsibility of every leader, whether, you know, whether they like it or not. If you're being honest with yourself, you can impact that. You can take control of it. Your own decision-making, the culture that you help set, defines the environment of the organization. So, you know, if you look at the Cubs, for example, you know, we don't have a representative number of African-American employees, especially for a team in a city like Chicago, but we just don't. And we might be up to major league averages in those areas, but that's nowhere near good enough. And that's part of the problem is that, as you know, now you look a little bit more broadly beyond the Cubs and you look at Major League Baseball, and our numbers aren't nearly good enough. You know, we have two African-American heads of baseball operation, two African-American managers, the percentage of scouts, the percentage of front office people, they just all fall well short, not to mention, you know, the percentage of African-American players in the game is under 8% now. So, you know, that stuff doesn't happen by accident. Again, these issues are institutionalized at this point. They're systemic. They're, as I said earlier, they're everywhere, whether you can see them or not. And there's a lot of unconscious bias that goes on. So I just looked at my own decision making, and, you know, I've hired a lot of, you know, African-American people and people from all different races and backgrounds. But, you know, if I'm being honest with myself, and in my time at the Cubs, I said the other day, I'm not afraid to say it again. Like, what, you know, there have been a lot of key decisions where if I end up hiring someone who looks like me or with a similar background as me. And I think that's, you know, that's a default for a lot of people, and a dangerous default, because you end up falling back on the comfort of the familiar. And when you do that, you don't end up with a diverse enough organization. You do that, you don't end up with diversity of perspective or experience or opinion as well. And you can't be quite as effective that way. So I just thought, that needed to be said, because I thought if I called myself out on it, maybe it would, just for a split second, also have, you know, cause others in baseball to take a look inside as well at their own unconscious biases to see if they're there, and see if you know, collectively we take a moment and try to change.
I really love that you and Kenny Williams are connected on this initiative, and that was one of the people that you reached out to, because, I mean, his background, you know, how he grew up is really important to this, and I feel like your approach and the way that he goes about things, I think it makes for a dynamite combination, and I'm glad to see that there have been, that baseball as a whole has kind of jumped in on this. So where do you think this goes from here inside baseball?
Yeah, I think, you know, the symbolic gesture we made at the draft with the 30 baseball decision makers holding up the placards that said Black Lives Matters and United for Change, and then the donation that we made ended up totaling with the matching over $1 million to five racial justice organizations. That was a really important step, but just the first step. That's something that we all acknowledge. I'm really proud of the group of 30 heads of baseball operations. It's hard to get this group to agree on anything. Everyone's in different circumstances within their own organization and at different points in their careers, but everybody was willing to stand up and make that statement. And so in recognizing that as the first step, I think we all agreed to look, to listen, first of all, listen to our players, listen to our coworkers with different backgrounds and different perspectives than us, then to look inward and examine whether there are things we can do better, such as try to identify and then eliminate the unconscious biases we have when it comes to hiring, for example. And then that there's plenty of action items that we can work on within the game. You know, there are some great programs already in place that we can support. There's a diversity fellowship through Major League Baseball. They've done terrific work with the Urban Youth Academies and the RBI programs, but usually those have been somewhat separate from baseball operations. And we have, you know, huge baseball operations infrastructures that can support these programs. It doesn't necessarily need to fall to, you know, the community relations programs to do that. But more than anything, I think it's standing up, speaking out, and being willing to listen, being willing to have the uncomfortable conversations. And that attitude will be reflected in our decision making. It'll be the pursuit of justice. If we can all keep that at the forefront, racial justice, if we can keep that at the forefront of our minds, will be reflected in the environments that we create within our organization as leaders. And then it'll be reflected in the clubhouse too. You know, it's been really disturbing and powerful to hear some of the best players in the game who are African-American speak up recently about being uncomfortable in their own clubhouses. And that's something that we have to all in the game take responsibility for and try to change. I think that starts with our attitudes, and it starts with getting, as Kareem said, getting us out in the light so we can all see it and fix it.
This has obviously been a fairly heavy interview. I would like to lighten it up, because I think everyone in Chicago was ecstatic when they saw that your organization drafted Ed Howard. So what was it about Ed Howard that convinced you that he's someone that you want inside that Cubs organization?
Well, the first thing, I think you start with the human being. And anytime you're taking a chance on a high school kid
in the first round, you want somebody that you can trust and somebody with character and with work ethic and with maturity, because it's a long road from being a high school senior to being an impact player in the big leagues. And our scouts did a tremendous job getting to know Ed. He's one of the most mature high school seniors we've ever been around. He's got some of the highest character we've ever been around. His parents did a phenomenal job in raising him. Beyond his parents, he's been, you know, part of some great institutions in this city, you know, from the Jackie Robinson West Little League program, which I've been proud to support through my foundation since 2013, to the White Sox ACE program, which is tremendous work, to Mount Carmel and their great coaching staff and support system there. So, and Ed has been smart enough to take advantage of all those resources and the village around him and put it to good use with unparalleled work ethic to get to the point where he is today. So that was the first thing, is trusting the person. And that was a slam dunk. That was a huge, huge asset that Ed brings to the table. And then, you know, this is a potentially really, really dynamic player and someone we've known for a long time. Obviously, you know, he was came onto the radar screen back in 2013-2014 with the Jackie Robinson West team and the League World Series. Got to meet him back then when he came to Wrigley, and then even as a high school and high school sophomore, he was out on the field with us for our pre-draft workout playing shortstop against high school seniors, taking ground balls with high school seniors and college juniors, and he stood out. He was the best shortstop on the field that day as a high school sophomore. So he's been on our radar screen a long time, and our scouts just did a great job tracking his progress. And, you know, defensively, he's extremely advanced, great feet, great hands, strong throwing arm, playmaking ability, terrific athlete, very projectable frame. He's 6'2", and has the type of body that we think is going to add strength without losing athleticism as he matures. And then offensively, while like almost every other high school senior, he's got work to do with his swing and his approach going forward as he adds strength. He already hits the ball really hard. You know, he doesn't necessarily have, you know, huge natural launch angle yet, but that's going to come. He's going to learn to get the ball in the air. He's going to learn to get a little bit more direct with his pass, but he already hits the ball really hard, and that bodes well for what he can be with a few small adjustments and just natural development time. So, you know, you got a guy who can stick at a premium position, probably, you know, has a chance to be a plus defender at a premium position, who's a great athlete, who already hits the ball hard, has a lot of, you know, charisma, intelligence, and the kind of character and work ethic that you want to invest in. So we're thrilled that he was there at our pick.
That's Theo Epstein with Lawrence Holmes right there on 670 The Score. Texters, Speaks, a couple weeks ago, I texted that Theo should run for MLB commissioner. The more I listen to the man, I wish he would run for president. I realize he doesn't have any political experience that I'm aware of, but neither did Trump. I'm starting it now, Theo for president. Long been discussed and rumored that Theo might go into politics when he's done. Who knows? He's a very smart, thoughtful guy, and his foundation has been doing a lot of work. He mentioned in there the foundation to be named later that he and his twin brother Paul have been a part of, have sponsored programs like Jackie Robinson West and lots of other inner city disadvantaged youth programs, bringing all sorts of resources to them in both Chicago and in Boston for the last 18 years. It is 670 The Score. I am Matt Spiegel, and this is Hit and Run. We will update you on the state of negotiations. Hint, they're not good. And we'll let one of the most likable players in baseball give you his comparison for the situation, as he's the dad and his baby wants something to drink. You'll hear that, among other things, next. And then our man Chris Kamka will tie the room together at around 11:40. It's Hit and Run up until noon on The Score.
Why does this room look amazing? What'd you change?
Oh, I just got these custom shades from Blinds.com. It's all online, so it's really easy. Great price, too.
Ugh, I remember shopping for Blinds.
I waited around all day just to get a quote.
Hi, sorry I'm late. I know you said just the bedroom, but what do you feel about the
bathroom?
I feel
like I had to say yes, just to get rid of her.
All right, just go ahead and sign here and we'll get everything taken care of.
It took forever. And the worst part, hidden fees. How about you?
I chatted with my Blinds.com design consultant on my time, got free samples, and it was all super high quality at a great price. Plus, they make it easy to DIY or add installation like I did.
Blinds.com sounds way better.
Way better. And everything comes with their 100% satisfaction guarantee. Plus, check this out. I can control them from my phone.
Whoa, magic.
There's a better way. Shop Blinds.com for up to 45% off. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
For draft pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Odyssey celebrates National Hispanic Heritage Month. Brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Yeah, I think there's definitely optimism. Anytime proposals are going back and forth, like I've said before, that's a good thing. It's unfortunate that the proposals that we've seen from the league have just been basically the same thing, packaged in different ways. But I think everyone heard last night, Commissioner said that they would be sending another one that would hopefully move the needle a little bit more. So I'm hopeful that we get to a place that we're playing more than 48 or 50 games, that the MLB and the Commissioner has the right to mandate. So hopefully we're looking at something closer to half a season where we feel like players are playing enough games and fans are getting baseball in their lives.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sunday mornings on The Score.
That's Ian Happ, who has showcased a very firm understanding of the situation. Over the past couple of months, he's been doing a podcast from his temporary home out there in Arizona and been on with Dan Bernstein every week right here on 670 The Score Thursdays. And it's been good, thoughtful stuff. A couple things in there. He said, it's a good thing as long as proposals are going back and forth. Well, more on that in a moment. He also says, hopefully more than the 48 or 50 games that the owners, that the commissioner can mandate. Well, more on that in a moment. But let's get to Andrew McCutchen, because when Ian says that what the owners have provided is the same offer dressed up in some different ways... Yeah, he's not wrong about that at all. The three different offers that the owners have presented have been really depressing because little things change, language changes, percentage of playoff money they might share changes. What doesn't change is the openness. There's no openness at all. None of the documentation that the players asked for has been given. And what doesn't change is the fact that they're asking the players to take less than their prorated salary. They're asking for that. Players are not willing to offer that. But here's Andrew McCutchen in a video. Just imagine he's holding up, at first, a sippy cup and talking to an off-screen baby.
All right, bud, listen. If you potty on the toilet, I'll give you some juice.
Yay! Yay, juice!
All right, buddy. Here's your water.
No!
What about water in this cup?
No juice.
I know we agreed on juice, but what about water? What about water in a bottle?
No juice.
What about water in a coffee mug? You love your coffee mugs.
No juice.
Look, it doesn't matter that we agreed on juice. I'm your dad, and you're drinking water. Now, either you drink this water, or you don't drink anything at all. Who's thirsty?
That's Andrew McCutchen. Water... Water, water. We agreed on juice. I know we agreed on juice, but here's water. And that's the way the players are going to see it. Flat out, just like that.
Who's thirsty?
I am. Color me thirsty. Thirsty for baseball. Tried to make some metaphors this morning. Some tweets. Got yelled at by some people. So it goes. See, here's the thing. I genuinely am angry at both sides. It is definitely more on the owners. Would you say it's 70-30 owners and players? Maybe even 80-20. Maybe some of you out there think it's 90-10. If anybody out there thinks it's 100-0, I don't agree with that. I don't agree with that at all. So, look, it is definitely more on the owners. And they have negotiated in bad faith. They've thrown these three offers in a row that have been the same. But there was language in the agreement that says if there are no fans, we can reassess. Because they're not making any money from the fans. Not making any money on tickets, any money on beer, and all of that stuff. That's how they operate day to day and do their thing. Should they take 100% of the loss in a year like this, in a shortened year like this? If you think that's a yes, I understand. I understand. I know so many people, too many people who have taken pay cuts, even for a limited time, 3-month pay cut, 4-month pay cut, that a complete unwillingness to even talk about that and deal with that strikes me as unnecessarily stubborn. And it's a stubbornness that we're seeing from the players that is based on losing. Year after year after year in these negotiations, every time they come up, it's based on losing. Now they don't want to lose. So we can't even get a short-term agreement together. These sides can't even both bend, both think, thoughtfully discuss, come to an agreement for a short time for each other. They did it in March. Made a deal through the end of May. That was nice. Now we're nowhere. And that money that the players got through the end of May was less than they might have made had they been playing, obviously, through May. But they weren't playing. They weren't playing at all. It just got closed down. Go home. We'll pay you. You know, I don't like being in this position where people think I'm just defending billionaires. And I'm not. Or bootlicking. I'm just telling you that I genuinely believe that both sides could have done better over these past few weeks. I'll say 80-20 on the owners. 70-30 is originally where I was. The more I've thought about it, 80-20. But I got no problem saying that 20. If you do, I think you're being unnecessarily binary about it. It's usually not how these things go. There are a few different polls out there. We did one at Hit and Run. Who are you mad at? Players, owners, both. Right now, a couple hundred votes in. Got 55% for the owners, 5% for the players, 40% for both. Yeah, it's about where I am. 80-20. So that's what? That's owners are included in the both. So that's about 95-5. I guess that's what that is. Now it's 57 for the owners, 38. It's still 95-5. Players only get 5. It's fine. I get it. I hate it. It's a terrible moment that just continues to go on and on and on. And the entire situation shows you just how broken the relationship is between owners and the Players Association. It's been broken and awful for a long, long time, and it remains broken. And, you know, if you were going to get openness, then maybe you could have had a bit of revenue sharing for a short-term year like this. All right, let's just split and agree that this has nothing to do with next year's CBA, but we'll come back in this weird year and just split revenue. By the way, show us everything. If the owners had been willing to do that, show the players some stuff, then we could have had some openness. But they don't want to show them because they're making more. It's just so gross. And it's nothing that I wished we were talking about. We could be looking at a month here where there could be spring training and will not be. A month. Talking about maybe a spring training beginning on the 15th of June of July, going for 3 weeks, and we get rolling around August 1. Today's the 14th. We're looking at a month of complete and utter inactivity. Is that what we're looking at? Very possibly. Because players have pushed away from the table, and owners have threatened them and basically challenged them to push away from the table, and that's where we stand. We'll see if they even bother to talk this week. Mark Grody is up at the top of the hour. He will be joined by Mark Potash. He'll be joined by John Morosi. Me, I'm Matt Spiegel on Hit and Run. I'll be joined by Chris Kampka next, right here on 670 The Score.
Who's thirsty?
Welcome back in on 670 The Score. It's Matt Spiegel here with you on Hit and Run. Wrapping up the show like we usually do, talking a little baseball with our friend. A smile trapped inside a brain, trapped inside a rainbow. Or wrapped inside a brain and a rainbow. I don't know, you're all three of those things, according to our buddy Jason Benetti. And we welcome in Chris Kampka, the Sultan of Stat from NBC Sports Chicago. Right now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford is in Melrose Park. What's up, Chris? How are you?
I'm good. Somebody wake up Benetti so we can clarify what I am.
There's so many reasons to wake up Benetti today. But I enjoyed leaving him a voicemail live on the air with Casper. I think if I were Benetti, I would like nothing more than to hear those two voices when I wake up sometime around 1:30.
I was particularly amused by that exchange because then Len drops the Edwin Jackson comp.
Yes.
With Kevin Bacon. And evidently, as it turns out, Edwin Jackson was born on the exact same day as Jason Benetti. So I jotted that down, which is pretty fun.
Wow. Think about that. So Benetti, I feel like, is obviously he's in the middle of his career, but I'd have to say he's really just kind of at the beginning. Len, in fact, called him one of the best young broadcasters in the business. And Edwin Jackson, I think of the grizzled old veteran who's played for everybody, and they're born in the same day and year, or just same day?
In the same day and year.
Unbelievable.
And I told Jason this, and I kind of like mentioned it to him during the broadcast that he was born on the day the White Sox hit back-to-back-to-back home runs for the first time in franchise history. I'm like, you were destined to do this. So that's a little fun fact.
A little fun fact pretty much describes the entirety of what you have within your head and bring to the show. And I
Well, sure, because I have to do it on behalf of others because there was nothing notable that happened on the Major League Diamond on February 25th. So I have to kind of, you know, do them for other people because I was born in the winter.
You had one of my favorite tweets of the day yesterday, and I retweeted it, and I'm looking for it now, and it is this.
What, it was ruined, I think.
Why? Well,
thinking of the right one.
It says, you're going to win 18, you're going to lose 18. It's what you do with those other 12 that really matters. That's
well, yeah, and now that the season's supposedly going to be at least 50 games, that's no longer good, so I kind of ruined it. Not that I'm rooting for fewer games. I'm Please, by all means, have more. But, I mean, give me a season that at least if a player started a hitting streak and had a hit every single game, that he had a chance to break Joe DiMaggio's hitting streak record. Because in a 48-game season, you can't do it.
Yeah, right.
I mean, about this. With a 48-game season, if a player hit one home run in every single game, that would be a record. But he'd be 25 home runs short of the major league record for home runs in a season.
Oh, gosh.
Still. So, I mean, come on, please. Let's get some more games in there, please.
25 home runs short. Goodness. Yeah. Speaking of that, long gone summer on tonight. You're going to be tuning in to watch Sosa and Maguire and that whole chase and refamiliarize yourself with the context of the season.
I am, because that was fun, and we need fun.
Yes.
Just forget how great these guys were hitting home runs, forget about everything else. It energized the entire nation. And I enjoy keeping track of that every day. And I imagine how much fun that would be today, where everybody can kind of get together and put their comments up in real time about it. Not write postcards to each other, like whatever you did in 98. A couple fun Sosa fun facts that I've put together here. So Barry Bonds has the most home runs in a major league season. It's 73 in 2001. The most home runs over a two-year span is Mark McGwire with 135. And McGwire has a three-year run, too, with 193 and four. So McGwire has the two, three, and four season span. But Sammy Sosa has the most home runs over a five-year span with 292. Sosa wow. also holds the record for a 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10-year span.
Wow. So that's how long he went once he hit that peak and prime. He went that long, over 60 twice in that span, right?
He did three times. In fact, he's the only player with three 60 homer seasons.
God.
And the fun thing is, so over a five-year span, over that five-year span, we hit 292 home runs, which is the most over a five-year span. He hit 63 times, and he won two home run titles. But not in any of the 60 home run seasons. He won the home run title in 2000 with 50. And he won a home run title in 2002 with 49. So the three seasons he did hit 60, he did not lead the league. And the two seasons he did not, did lead the league, which is weird.
Yeah, that is weird. That is weird. So in those other years, was one of them Bonds, and one of them was McGwire, and who else led?
McGwire, and Bonds.
McGwire, and Bonds, outdistancing Sammy in all three of the seasons that he hit 60-plus. God, that's crazy. Three seasons of 60-plus is just freaking bananas. Kempka, I grew up with one of my favorite trivia questions being the five guys to hit 50 or more homers in a season twice. And it was Fox and Willie Mays and Mantle and Ralph Kiner and Babe Ruth. Those were the five. Those were the five. And that was it for a while there. Hank Greenberg at 58, never again. George Foster at 52, never again. Cecil Fielder got into the 50s, never again. You know, like those kind of, it was rarefied special air. And now that has been just completely obliterated by that era. I wonder how many people have hit 50 or more in a season twice now. 13, 14, something like that.
I can find that answer in just a second here. But, yeah, I mean, it's crazy how the home run thing has exploded. It's just, you know, 50 home runs used to be a thing and now really not so much anymore. And, you know, it's tough to deal with when your standards are not what they used to be by the nine players.
Yes.
And 50 home runs multiple seasons. So you had the five you mentioned, as well as Griffey Jr., Alex Rodriguez, Mark McGwire, and Sammy Sosa.
So nine. So we're at nine right now.
And Pete Alonso at 53 in his rookie years, so he could do it. And I think Stanton and Judge are two guys that, you know, if healthy, they are the best home run hitters in the game. So, you know, they can do it as well. But especially now with the juice ball. So, you know, now's the time for home runs. It's a good time to revisit home run hitting craziness. So I'm looking forward to this thing.
So
quick draft note, by the way.
Yes, please.
Okay. So in 1979, the White Sox in the 25th round drafted the first baseman out of Proviso West named Len Casper. Spelled the same way, too. And I can assure you out there that it's not the same Len Casper, or else he'd be the youngest drafted player ever.
Is he aware of that? Have you shared that with him, by the way? He's got to know.
I don't know if I've ever told him that, but yeah, it's one of my fun little facts. Of course, the White Sox drafted him. He's a local guy, so how about that?
That is tremendous. And then who drafted Benetti? Who drafted Jason Benetti? Have there been any MLB Benettis? Probably not.
No, and I checked. No, none even drafted. Because, I mean, if I'm going to look up the Casper thing, I got to find Benetti and do it.
Hey, I saw you tweet a picture this week. You said, good mail day. A good day for mail, meaning the U.S. Post Office. And just stacks and piles and packs of cards. My God, what were those from, Chris Kamka?
Well, those are actually 9 Carlton Fisk cards that I do not own. So that's rare because that's, you know, I have a huge collection and there's not many that I don't have. So if I find them, they're special and it's cool to find them.
Wow. So those were 9 specific Fisk cards.
10 of them, actually. Yeah.
10. And so now, are you fairly complete on your Carlton Fisk card collection now?
Not even close. I mean, it's as many as they make nowadays, it's impossible. Yeah. But at least I like to chip away at it. It's one of those things, like, I'm an obsessive collector. I got to have everything. And there's always a challenge to find something new. And I think that's the fun of being an obsessive collector. Mm. That the chase of finding something you don't have or you've never seen before.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what that's all about. Sickness, I don't recommend it.
Texter says that Sammy Sosa also holds the record for the most hat sizes in a 5-year period. That may be true, although Bonds is the one whose head really grew and grew and grew, but maybe Sammy's did as well. I'm not sure.
I would go Bonds over Sosa on that one. But I mean, I watched the last game at Old Comiskey a few days ago, and Sosa was in that lineup. Oh my goodness. It's not even recognized.
No, it's a different human being, right?
So we got to get to this good comp, bad comp for this week.
Yes, please. Yeah, the good comp, bad comp this week is Randy Johnson. I likened Randy Johnson to the Washington Monument, and Jason Minetti likened him to the Great Gatsby. Your thoughts, Chris Kamka?
Oh, man, I kept trying to wrap my head around my own comp, and I just couldn't do it. Hmm. And it's weird that you picked the Washington Monument because he had one game in his entire career in Washington. So it's kind of, you know. Hmm. But I'll give it to you, though. I'll give you Washington Monument because fiction books just don't appeal to me. So that's how I'm going to go. I'm going to score it. Spiegel wins this one, Washington Monument. Your,
nice.
Your reasoning was pretty sound.
Right?
So you're up 2-1.
Woohoo! Struggled with control early on, and the monument struggled on hold for 23 years because people were struggling to control the society. And then killing the birds. That was it. That's where I got it. A bushel full of dead birds killed by the monument on a daily basis.
Yeah. Nice work. I congratulate Janet. By the way, did you know that a thing during the early 19th century, or late 19th century, early 20th century, was players would get to the top of the Washington Monument and drop balls down, and then a major league catcher would have to catch them.
Wow.
And that was a thing that they did.
I did not know that. See?
Yeah, several major league catchers tried to do the trick of catching a ball dropped from the top of the Washington Monument.
See, this is what you add, and I should have had you add to good comp, bad comp as I was writing. Chris Kamka, you're the best. We got to roll. Thank you, sir.
All right, thanks for having me.
He's the best. He's Chris Kamka, at C. Kamka on Twitter, a must follow. Thank you to him. Thank you to Len Casper. Thank you to Jason Benetti in absentia. Thank you to Bruce Levine. And thank you so much to Sean Anderson, who does a great job producing the show each and every week. Mark Grody is up next. I'm in tomorrow with Zach Zaidman, and Ron Coomer will be with us for about an hour as well. Tonight, right after Long Gone Summer, it'll be Bruce Levine with Pat Hughes and Ron Coomer. That's tonight at the very end of the documentary. So make sure you tune right over to 670 The Score, where they will be taking your calls. All right, everybody. Have a great day. See you soon.
Who's thirsty?
Why does this room look amazing? What'd you change?
Oh, I just got these custom shades from Blinds.com. It's all online, so it's really easy. Great price, too.
Ugh. I remember shopping for blinds. I waited around all day just to get a quote.
Hi, sorry I'm late. I know you said just the bedroom, but what do you feel about the
bathroom?
I feel
like I had to say yes, just to get rid of her.
All right, just go ahead and sign here and we'll get everything taken care of.
It took forever. And the worst part, hidden fees. How about you?
I chatted with my Blinds.com design consultant on my time, got free samples, and it was all super high quality at a great price. Plus, they make it easy to DIY or add installation like I did.
Blinds.com sounds way better.
Way better. And everything comes with their 100% satisfaction guarantee. Plus, check this out. I can control them from my phone.
Whoa, magic.
There's a better way. Shop Blinds.com for up to 45% off. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Odyssey celebrates National Hispanic Heritage Month, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.